Like this morning to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 27. Book of Matthew, chapter 27. We just want to read verse 36. And sitting down, they watched him there. All four gospel writers give account of Christ's crucifixion. What we've read here is a very small portion of Matthew's account. And we want to take our thought this morning from the words, "They watched him there." I believe that the "they" has direct reference to the Roman soldiers. But having said that, there may have been others as well who sat down and watched him there. And that is our subject. They watched him there. They watched him there. I want to begin by looking at the events leading up to what we've just read. We know that on the evening of the Passover, Jesus was betrayed. He was arrested. And we read in Matthew 26:56, "Then all the disciples forsook him and fled." And according to John's account in chapter 18, verses 13 and 14, Christ was then bound, led away to Annas, who was the father-in-law to Caiaphas. And from there, Matthew 26:57, he was led to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. And Caiaphas begins to question Jesus concerning the accusations that were made against him. And they determined there in Matthew 26, verse 66, he is guilty of death. Notice Matthew 26, verse 67 and verse 68. He's been declared guilty of death. Verse 66, he's guilty of death. "Then did they spit in his face and buffeted him, and others smote him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy unto us, thou Christ, who is it that smote thee?" Then in the next morning, Matthew 27, verses 1 and 2, he's led away to Pilate, who was the governor. And we read in Luke's account, Luke 23, verse 2, that they said to Pilate, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Pilate questioned Jesus, declared in Luke 23, verse 34, "I find no fault in this man." The response of the people, notice in Luke chapter 23, in verse 5, the response to "I find no fault in this man." "And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirreth up the people, teaching throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place." And it was at this point that Pilate discovered that Jesus did not even belong to his jurisdiction, that he belonged to the jurisdiction of Herod. So Pilate very gladly sends Jesus to Herod. And Herod, of course, proceeds to question Jesus, and he too finds nothing worthy of death in him. Notice in Luke 23, verse 11, "And Herod with his men of war set him at naught, and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. So there's Jesus. He's before Pilate once again. And in Luke 23, verse 13, Pilate called together the chief priest and the rulers of the people. And he said to them, "Neither I nor Herod have found anything worthy of death in this man." Pilate, of course, wanting to set Christ free, but without compromising himself in the eyes of his superiors, he makes reference to a custom that was regularly practiced, the custom of releasing one prisoner during the Passover. So Pilate figures, since some prisoner must be released and set free, he looks at this as his opportunity of allowing the innocent Christ to go free. So he offers to chastise Jesus and set him free and to crucify Barabbas, who was the most notorious of all their criminals at that time. But we see the people in unison cry out, "Away with this man, Jesus, release unto us Barabbas." Pilate can't believe what he's hearing. So for a second time, Luke 23:20, he makes this plea. And we see the response in Luke 23, verse 21, "But they cried, saying, Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate then, the third time, declared the innocence of Jesus Christ. And we see again the response of the people in verse 23 of Luke 23. "And they were instant with loud voices, requiring that he might be crucified. And the voices of them and of the chief priest prevailed. And Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required." He scourges Jesus, delivers him to the Roman soldiers to be crucified. And what transpired next is recorded there in Matthew 27, verses 27 through verse 31. And what we see is the Roman soldiers, they go out into the common hall, and suddenly he's surrounded by a host of soldiers. They strip him of his clothes, dress him in a royal robe, and as he stood before them, they place a crown of thorns upon his head. They place a reed in his hand, and they mockingly say, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they spit upon him. And then they took the reed from his hand and they began to beat upon his head. And as a result, the thorns were driven further into his skull. So there's Jesus. His head is embedded with a crown of thorns. The flesh of his back has been torn to shreds. The muscles, the tissues have been lacerated from the scourging. His face is bloodied and bruised, and upon that face is the spittle of sinful man. And he's being mocked. Then they would place a heavy cross upon his back, that back that has been pulverized, that back that is bleeding, and they led him away to crucify him. As they're making their way to the place of crucifixion, there's people in front of him clearing the way. There are people beside him. There are people behind him. The vast majority of the people are anxious for Jesus to be crucified. So to speed up the process, they force a man by the name of Simon to carry the cross upon which Jesus would be crucified. And then we read in Matthew 27, verse 33, and when they were come unto the place called Golgotha, the place where the demands and consequences of a broken law were carried out, the place of ultimate punishment, they've now arrived at that place, a place of suffering, a place of torture, a place of unspeakable pain, a place of misery and sorrow and heartbreak, a place of execution. It is the place of condemnation. And when they were come to the place called Golgotha, this is the place that always meant death. Always meant an agonizing death. It is a place of humiliation. It is a place of indignity and disgrace. It is a place that men greatly feared. A very appalling place. Having arrived at this place, notice verse 34 of Matthew 27. They gave him vinegar to drink, mingled with gall. When he had tasted thereof, he would not drink. This was given, of course, to render one insensible to the pains of crucifixion. Christ, knowing what it was for, when he tasted it, he refused to drink it. He was unwilling to blunt the pains of death. It was at this point that the cross would have been taken from Simon, laid upon the ground. A Roman soldier would take a hammer and spikes and nail one hand to the cross and then the other and then the feet. The cross would be lifted from the ground. The ligaments and bones of the wrist are supporting the entire weight of the body. And then that cross is thrust into the ground, pulling all the bones out of joint. Notice verse 35, the second part of the verse. They parted my garments among them, and upon my vesture did they cast lots. The soldiers divided up the garments of Christ. They thought, we can sell these garments. These garments are worth something. So they gamble for the garments of Christ. And then we read in our text, and sitting down there, and sitting down, they watched him there. They watched him there. And we want to spend the rest of our time watching him there. Remember, there were two thieves crucified with Christ. There's one on the left. There's one on the right. So there's three crosses that day. But we read, and sitting down, they watched him. They weren't paying any attention to the thief on the left or the thief on the right. All their focus is upon that one who is upon that center cross. The inscription above the cross said, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Sitting down, they watched him. They watched Jesus there. They didn't watch Barabbas. Barabbas deserved to be there. But Jesus is there. They let Barabbas go. Jesus, the Son of God. They watched him there. There were many gathered that day. We read in Luke 23, verse 48, and all the people that came together at that sight, beholding the things which were done. Most gathered to that sight out of furious malice. No doubt there were some there out of mere curiosity. But all the attention is upon the one on that center cross. We read in Matthew 27:39, we read of some that passed by, just walking by. And as they did, we read that they reviled or they cursed him, wagging or shaking their heads. Notice Matthew 27, verse 40. These are the individuals that are passing by. And saying, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. Save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. These are people that are just passing by. Again, all the focus is upon that one. The chief priests were there. Verse 41, likewise also the chief priests mocking him. Thou be the Son of God, come down. Save thyself. You saved others. He saved others himself, he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. He trusted God. Let him, let God deliver him now, if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. And then in verse 44, we see the chief priest, or the two thieves, cast the same in their mouths. They also joined in on the mocking. Luke 23, verse 49, we read of some who stood afar off, beholding these things. But my point is, all attention is upon the one on that center cross. Most that day viewed the one on that center cross as a criminal, as an enemy. Most in the crowd, no doubt, felt hatred in their hearts toward the one on that center cross. There were some who perhaps felt pity and sorrow. There were many, of course, who were indifferent and detached. Didn't mean anything to them. Also amongst the crowd that day were a little band of faithful ones who felt love in their hearts. And again, upon that cross are the words, this is Jesus. This is Jesus. And they watched him there. The question is, what do you see when you look upon that cross? What do you see? For the saved, we see Jesus, our Savior. If you're unsaved, I pray that you could see him as your only hope. Your only hope. There was a time when I sat with those mentioned in our text, hardened toward Him. There was a time when we could be identified with those who passed by, cursing Him. There was a time when we could be identified with the chief priest and with the scribes, demeaning His person. There was a time when we could be very detached and indifferent toward the scene. But now, since we have been saved by this one, we come to this place and we watch Him there, and we see something quite different. And we're greatly impacted and affected in an entirely different way than we were before. So what do we see? Watching Him there. Well, we can clearly see the inscription upon the cross. This is Jesus. There was a time that meant nothing, but that's no longer so. This is Jesus, and we know that the one upon that center cross is the most precious, the most lovely, the most beautiful, the most meaningful and influential individual that ever was. This is Jesus. By that name, demons have fled. Disease and suffering have been overcome. I see that inscription. This is Jesus. And seeing Him there, I know that He's God. God clothed in a body of human flesh. I know that He's the Almighty, the Eternal, the Omniscient, All-Sufficient God in a body of human flesh. Watching Him there, I see the enfleshment of God. Seeing Him there, His body is mangled, wounded, bruised, has a crown of thorns upon His head. And I know that He has come for a people. Watching Him there, I see the one who voluntarily left the adorations of heaven and came to the abominations of earth. Watching Him there, I know that He is the one who left the coronations of heaven to face the condemnation of earth. He is the one who left the majesties of heaven to come to face the miseries of earth. As we watch Him there, we know that this is the one who left the praises of heaven. He has now submitted Himself to the cursings of earth. Watching Him there, we know He's the one who left the riches of heaven to willingly bear the poverty of earth. Watching Him there, we now know that He has never has one stooped so low as He. Watching Him there, we see the Creator of the universe, the sustainer of all things, the King of kings, the Lord of lords. He's superior to all. He's beyond all. He's the only deliverer. He's the only way to God. He's God's cure. He's God's solution. Watching Him there, We know that in Him is light, in Him is healing, in Him is strength. In Him is the relief and the joy and the encouragement and the peace and the life and the victory that every sinner needs. Watching Him there, we know that in Him is forgiveness and righteousness acceptable to God. Watching Him there, we know that in Him there is redemption and justification before God and reconciliation with God and fellowship and nearness to God. So watching Him, we see His person. But watching Him there, we see unparalleled disdain. It's all around. As you sit and watch, the air is filled with cursing and utter disdain. Again, as you face those three crosses, there's one on the left, one on the right, and upon those two crosses are your usual criminals. But there's also a cross in the middle. And everyone's attention is focused upon that middle cross. You don't have to stand there too long and you realize that the one upon that center cross is far more despised, far more hated and shunned than the two guilty thieves upon the other two crosses. You can see that He is more mocked and more taunted and ridiculed than the two thieves. There's far more scorn for Him, far more disgust and hostility and animosity than the two selfish thieves on the other crosses. The one on that center cross is looked upon with far, far more contempt. And he is seen as far more despicable and vile than the two thieves. You watch him. You see that his head is embedded with a crown of thorns. The blood has run down from such, and his body is mutilated and mangled. Large Roman spikes have been driven through his hands and feet. All his bones are out of socket. His back, again, has been scourged. Bruises all over. So much so that his face does not even look like the face of a man, we read in Isaiah. And upon that face is the dried spittle of sinful man. In all the history of the world, there has never been a scene in which so much unrestrained derision and contempt were cast upon, poured upon one man. Watching him there, we know that he's perfectly pure. He's holy. He's harmless. He's undefiled. He has no fault. He has no sin. He's innocent. And yet, he's in the place where the most violent and dishonest of men have been brought. He is pure, but he's in the place where the most wicked and vile and repulsive of mankind have been brought to face the consequences of their crimes. Watching him there, I see one who has done no wrong, yet he's dying the death of a criminal and being treated as if he were the worst of criminals. Never has one been more abhorred and disowned than the one on that cross? Watching him there, we see unparalleled suffering. He's far more mangled than the two thieves. And his suffering is much more intense. We can see the wounds, the bruises, and the lacerations. And then there is unimaginable misery and anguish and torment and travail of soul. We read in Hebrews 2 verse 9, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. Watching him there, if you were there that day, about noon, there is suddenly an unexpected darkness that envelops the entire land. Darkness falls over the earth like a thick blanket. Luke records in Luke 23:45, and the sun was darkened. And it's plainly stated that this darkness was from the sixth hour unto the ninth hour. 3 hours of intense supernatural darkness. At 1 o'clock, it was still dark. At 1:30, it was still dark. At 2 o'clock, it was still dark. At 2:30, it was still dark. At 2:45, it was still dark. From the sixth hour unto the ninth hour. 3 hours of extensive, penetrating, supernatural darkness. This is a darkness that you and I know nothing about. A darkness without any hint of light. It's a terrifying darkness. It's a horrifying darkness. It's a darkness that's excruciating and chilling. Is a darkness that could be felt. It was in that dark, it was the darkness of hell. It was the darkness of evil. It was during that 3 hours of darkness that Christ endured what only He could endure. It was in that 3 hours of darkness that He endured unimaginable distress of soul, and pain, and misery, and sorrow, and torment. We cannot possibly fathom the depths of Christ's agony during that time. We read in Isaiah 53 and verse 11 that he was in, we read of the travail, the tribulation of his soul. This was the peak of his suffering. You see, it was during this time, the one who had never been out of fellowship with God is forsaken by God. It was at this time that God, the Father, left him. And there's Jesus. Without the presence of the Father. Without the light that only the Father can give. Without the comfort that only the Father can give. Without the peace and the friendship and the fellowship that was in God. And alone, He suffered. Yes, there's a mass crowd. But Christ suffered alone. He's all by himself. The Father has left him. Watching him there, I see him in my place. Sitting down, they watched him there. Again, he's innocent. that he's being treated as the worst of criminals. He's the sinless one. Absolutely impeccable. He was the one who brought more hope and cheer and relief to mankind than any other in his short time on earth. His life was love. He's brought to this place where the most violent and dishonest of men have been brought, where thieves and murderers have been brought. And watching him there, we see, again, he's done no wrong, but he's dying the death of a criminal. He's not there because he's guilty of any crime. He's not there because he has broken any law. He is there for the sins of his people. He is there with the sins of his people. And he's there in the place instead of his people. And he is there because he wants to be. He voluntarily took this place. So watching him there, I see him in my place. He's dying the death of a criminal. And he's doing so for me and in my place. The reason he's there is because he took upon himself every single one of my sins. You cannot even begin to count the sins of a lifetime. He took upon himself all the vileness of all our sins, all the filth, took upon himself all the guilt of our sins, took upon himself all the debt of my sin, a debt that I could never pay. Sin is the greatest burden in the world. Sin is the most loathsome, the most vile, the most disgusting, the most filthy, the most wretched, the most wicked, the most hateful, the most degrading, the most shameful thing in the universe. And the entire load of my sin was upon him. And he has voluntarily and willingly and on purpose come to this place for me. Watching him there, I know that he's there for me. For me. For me. For me. He's made a curse for me. He's considered the worst of criminals for me. Jesus, with my sin, went voluntarily and willingly with a heart of love to this place. And there he is. For me. For me. There was a time that we could be indifferent. There was a time we could join in with the chief priest and the passerby. But sitting down and watching him there, knowing that it was for me, we see everything differently now. For me, in my place. He endured unimaginable distress and pain. Watching him there, I see that he's wounded, he's bruised, he's punished, he's lacerated, he's oppressed, he's tormented for me. For me. And in my place. There he is. All my sins are upon him. And for me. And in my place he endured the wrath of God that my sins deserved. And for me he was in travail of soul. It says he made his soul an offering for sin. He received what my sins deserved at the hand of God. Watching him there, I see him laying down his life for his enemies, paying a debt for his enemies that they could not pay. God the Father looked down upon his Son, his beloved Son, and he sees him with all my sin upon him, those sins which deserve the eternal wrath and indignation and anger of God. We read in Romans chapter 8 that God spared not his own Son. But instead, he treats his own Son as if he had been the sinner, which he never was, never could be. Watching him there, I see that for me, he was despised and rejected. For me, he was made sorrowful. For me, he was put to grief and was stricken and smitten and afflicted. For me, he was bruised. For me, he was punished. For me, he was oppressed. For me, he is in travail of soul. Watching him there, I see God himself. I see the King of Kings and Lord of Lords stooping to unheard depths for me. Watching him there, I see he's paying a price for me. He's enduring for me the enraged fury of God against my sin. This is not just a good man dying a terrible death. This is Jesus Christ paying a sin debt for me. This is not merely a brave man dying for truth. This is not merely a man dying as a result of Roman injustice. Watching him there, I see that he's dying for me. Watching him there, I see unparalleled love. The love that is beyond amazing. Watching him there, I see an unprecedented love. No one is loved like the one who sent his Son. He's there because he loves me. Because he loves me. If you know that today, how can you be indifferent toward the one who is upon that center cross? He's there out of love for his enemies. So in closing, for us that are saved, watching him there humbles us. It fills us with gratitude. It fills us with love. Watching him there, how can you not feel an indebtedness to him? Watching him there causes us to love him. And it stirs us to praise and to give him honor. Watching him there, we want to exalt him. We want to bow before him. We want to worship him. We want to live for him. Watching him there, what do you feel? You that are saved. Is there a drawing to him? Watching him there, what does that mean to you? If you love him today, love him more. If you think highly of him today, think more highly of him. If you serve him more. If you're close to him, draw closer. If you're zealous for him, be more zealous. If you're consumed with him, be more consumed. If you've surrendered to him, be more surrendered. And if you're unsaved, what do you see? Can you today, can you see Jesus, as you watch him there, can you see Jesus with your sin upon him? Can you see that? You have to see that before you can be saved. So I'm asking you today, watching him there, unsaved sinner, can you see him with your sin upon him? Can you see him dying in your place? Can you see that? Is it real? If so, can you trust your soul with that? That's salvation. Can you trust your soul? That's Jesus, the Son of God, with my sins upon him, paying my sin debt. I trust that today. Put all my trust in what Jesus has done. I put all my trust in the person of Jesus Christ. I'm not trusting in myself. I'm not trusting in anything else. I can see him with my sins. And I believe that he has paid my sin debt. That's salvation. Sitting down, they watched him there. We need to sit down every now and then at the foot of the cross and watch him there. Watch him there. Again, there was a time when we could be identified with those Roman soldiers. We could have been identified with the passerbys. We could have been identified with the chief priests and the scribes. And I pray today that we could be identified with the little band of the faithful. There was Mary, there was John, there were others. And everything looks different. Oh, how thankful we ought to be that there is salvation. and it is in Jesus Christ. You will find it nowhere else this day. Everywhere else you look, you're looking in the wrong place. Salvation can only be found and had in Jesus Christ. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse song.
Turn to 100.